What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome you into another edition of Meet Me at Mutual. Sometimes I have to think about what show I'm actually doing. It's just wrong, but I am. Meet Me at Mutual. It's me. It's Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the Bat, C70 on Twitter, and Alan Medlock from the Redbird Daily, and Medlock1 on Twitter. We're recording this as the Cardinals are taking on the Padres on Friday night. It's in the second inning right now. The Cardinals have a 3-0 lead. Because of Mr. Paul DeYoung's big fly. And so it's good. The Cardinals stopped the bleeding as much as a 2-game series against Minnesota would be called bleeding. Although that's probably actually, well, I don't know. The Cardinals didn't do enough to bleed in that series against Minnesota. I mean, they had a total of like 5 hits, I think, in the whole series. So, but Alan, again, this is a team that's in first place. They win a game last night, 2-1. They got a lead tonight against the Padres team. And we were talking about this last week, how they really had to come through this set, with the Twins in Minnesota, Minnesota on both ends of this Padres series, and winning much more than they lose. And, you know, if they can win tonight, they'll be even and can go for them there. You and I were talking just a minute ago. It's a little bit different team. Even though last year at this time, this team was in first place as well, there's a different feel about this team than there was against that Mag Sierra-led surge that they had mid-May last year.
Yeah, this seems like this one has a little more sticking power, just mainly due to the confidence that I have in their pitching. You know, I know the lineup is really weak, and I know that's going to be a heavy topic for us tonight, just because some guys you feel like are close to getting going. I feel like Ozuna with another hit tonight. I do feel like he's close. I know the power numbers are really concerning to some, which I think that those are going to pick up, but he is hitting. You know, I think that we have another couple being Fowler and Karp that were a little, maybe more than a little concerned about. I know that was probably 10 minutes of our conversation before the show, and that's been the radio, that's been the hot topic today on the radio all day is Matt Carpenter. So that's a little worrisome, but it seems like they're just a little bit, they're better than they were last year, and they feel like they belong a little more than they did last year, to where, like, it just seems so dysfunctional almost all season, to where this year I just think that it's just plug and play places in the lineup that the guys are going to get him at bats. I mean, like, I think we're all in agreement that Jericho needs to be playing, and I think that's coming to fruition now. I think we're seeing it, as sad as that is, that it may be at the downfall of Carpenter, but at least he's playing a little bit. So I think that, I know roster management's also going to be another topic that we talk about tonight, but it just has a different feel about it. They seem more of a contender, and I think that Chicago series probably is what put the stamp on the season that, hey, they're maybe some staying power with these guys.
Hey, you'd hope so. I mean, you have 3 dramatic games with the Cubs that you win and wind up winning both. All 3 of them, including 2, you know, come from behind, stave off, you know, elimination, as it were, you know, down to your last strike type of things. So that's good to see. And it is as a team that, you know, hasn't hit, except for that, you know, it kind of feels like right now they're very almost streaky. I mean, you know, you had that. Have a good run, you go in and you get swept by Pittsburgh. You come back and you win 5 in a row, and then you get swept by the Twins. Come back and, you know, start playing well against San Diego. You know, I guess if you can win 5 for every two or three you lose, I guess you're doing all right. But it kind of gives you that stop and start roller coaster type feeling if you're watching this team. Let's talk a little bit. Let's go ahead and talk about the lineup. And, you know, tonight we're looking at a lineup. Let's just read it off. It was Pham, Bader, Martinez, Ozuna, Jerko DeJong, Kelly, Wong, and Weaver. And I think it was one of the few times this season, maybe the only time. Well, I think I can remember a couple others, but one of the very few times where we didn't have a whole lot of complaints from people online about this lineup. You know, Mike Matheny sits Carpenter and Fowler, who are both abysmal this year. Abysmal may not even cover it. I think the combined, they have like two or three hits against lefties. And they're hitting like, you know, well sub 100 against them. They get Jerko in the lineup. He leaves Wong in there, even if it's a lefty, because you see what Wong can do, or, you know, at least play defense. You get a chance to see Bader. It's a lineup that feels good, especially when you're going up against a lefty that nobody's ever seen before. Unfortunately, this is, I mean, it's hard to see this lineup being consistent, and you really got to talk about Carpenter and Fowler and their struggles this year. And I wrote a little bit about Carpenter today at the site. But Carpenter is a polarizing figure, and he has been. I mean, he was even so much last year, but, you know, it's like everybody was fine with Carpenter when he produced, and now as soon as he doesn't, the knives are out to some degree. Mm-hmm. But he also brings that on himself because, I mean, he's hitting 147 on the season. I know a lot of people look at the underlying numbers and say he's going to turn it around, but how long do you wait for that to happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's my concern is I hope he does. I mean, because, you know, I love the hitter that Carpenter can be when he's at his best. I don't know if we're ever going to see him at his best again, but I like the line drive doubles machine with occasional power, and I think it would greatly benefit this lineup. But, like, right now, he's not the best option. And that's what bothers me about him playing all the time, is that Jerko's done everything that in his power to crack the lineup, but he's going to lose at bats to Carp, who they're trying to get going, kind of similar to Craig. I think there's probably an Alan Craig who's going to be talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that there's a master plan in this, like you and I talked, I said, you know, the lack of playing time that Jerko gets, I wonder if the hamstrings weren't a bigger issue, but he's moved well. And, you know, he's hit well, and he's always filled the position well. And so I was like, well, you're going to eliminate that. And then Wong's played. We see the benefits of him playing every day. You know, he's arguably, and maybe even more so, the best defensive second baseman in the National League right now, mm-hmm. for a ground ball pitching staff. So he needs to play. So he's just not their best. He's kind of the odd man out at this point. So there's got to be, you know, I'm afraid it's going to still be Jerko, but it needs to be Carpenter as the guy that has to earn back the spot in the lineup. And I'm not so certain that anybody else thinks that way. I hope that he can take advantage of the DH in Minnesota to show that he can do it. But at this point, Martinez's bat and Jerko's glove and Wong's glove outweigh the importance of Carpenter in the lineup. And I don't know how popular opinion that's going to be.
Well, it depends on who's listening to the show, I guess. Which side of the Civil War that you're on.
At this point, I'm not so sure. I'm not certain that Carpenter has a lot of support.
There are some. And like I said, I mean, you get into those people like Craig Edwards and Zach Gifford and a lot of guys that are much smarter than me and understand. And you look at the, you know, yes, the shift is a problem. And if he can't hit it, he can figure out how to hit again away from the shift, that's not going to help. And yes, his strikeout rate is up. And I think that's a really big thing. I mean, the guy that came into the season saying he was tired of selling his soul for home runs and didn't want to strike out, his strikeout rate's up from 20 to 27%. You know, he's striking out over a quarter of the time. That's not good. I mean, especially for the fact that he's not gotten power to go with it. But, you know, the underlying numbers, you know, his approach, you know, the way he's hitting the ball, he should have better numbers. And I know that people look at that as, you know, this bad luck as an excuse. I don't think it is to some degree. I think there, you look at those numbers and you look at how the ball's coming off his bat and how hard it's coming off and where it's going, and a lot of times those should drop, or drop at least a better rate than they are. Now, is that going to turn around? I don't know. You know, it'll even out someday, maybe, but it may not be this year. You know, and that's assuming he can swing the bat well enough, because like you were talking about him, he doesn't look right, and I don't know. He's going to have to take a different mental approach, I think, to the game, whether swinging at different pitches or what. It feels like, like I said in the piece today, I think it's 45% of the time he goes up there and either, you know, he doesn't make contact, either walks or strikes out. And that's their value to walking, don't get me wrong, but you got to have something else. I mean, you got to have some sort of offensive game, and so I don't know. I don't know if it's go up there and start, you know, thinking your first good pitch, you're swinging at it, or what. But it feels like right now, at least when we've seen him, and you know, maybe a day off will help. But he feels pretty tentative, and he's taking a lot of pitches that he should be swinging at.
Yeah, which makes you wonder if he's compromised. I love Carpenter as a hitter. I love that approach, but like last night was one of those that he was really exposed. He looked lost. I was really down on him, and I think everybody else is, because it's been so widely talked about today, and then the numbers have been thrown out so heavy. It's a tough spot. I mean, last year, to where it just seemed like, okay, let's get to 500, get a game over 500, okay, get going. This year they have a little bit of a plus minus in the win column, to where they can maybe play a little bit, especially on this road trip. But the thing is, it's easy to see that they're not the best team right now with him in the lineup. So, I don't know. It's going to be a balancing act, and I love having the surplus. It's a good problem to have. But I still think you can play your hot hand here for the next little bit. So the way that he's going to have to come out of this is he's going to have to hit his way out of it. And I'm sure he's going to get his chances, but I'm not so certain he should. You know, I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think that's the drawback. I mean, you want a Carpenter that is hitting. You want a Carpenter that looks kind of like he used to look. But... you know, it's difficult to get into a groove when you're sitting on the bench. But if he's not sitting, I mean, they get back to that question we were asking on how long do you wait on him to come around? I mean, again, the process looks good and the results just aren't there. When are they going to come? How long can you wait for them to come around? I don't know. I mean, Carpenter is 32, closing in on 33. You know, when you couple this with last year, you could start talking about a decline. It's a delicate thing, because I don't think you can ever imagine a time where Matt Carpenter's going to be out of the lineup for 3 out of 7 days.
Sure.
Even though maybe he should be, like you said, maybe with Jerko, maybe with others, he could take and play basically every other game, but that's not the way that... It's definitely not the way the Cardinals operate. I don't know that it's the way baseball would operate. I don't know if Matt Carpenter had this kind of history with another team, if they would treat him any differently than the Cardinals are. But with as many options as the Cardinals have, you're right. It becomes difficult to see that he has to be there. Now, you know, we talk a lot about Carpenter, and for good reason. And I know there's some talk about Fowler, but it feels like I don't know what to do about Fowler, because I haven't seen, and I surely can't do the work that Zach and those guys do, but I haven't seen the same sort of the process is fine with Fowler. You know, I haven't heard that his these barreling balls that are being caught or things of that nature. I'm not hearing that, which makes me feel like, I mean, either they haven't looked at Valor that much, or more likely, there's nothing good that's going to be there to support that. So that means to me that, you know, he needs to change his mechanics, he needs to choose something, but, you know, you're in the second year of a 5-year contract that the team went out to get you to be and you already moved off center field. I mean, how much can the, I mean, and you've got Bader, you've got all these other outfielders that could come up. It's a frustrating place for Fowler to be and for the team to be because, again, I can't see them sitting him for an extended period of time.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, it's one of those where I really like our outfield athleticism. It's a lot better. Now I think that Pham is a lot better center fielder than I gave credit. He covers a lot of ground, and I think Ozuna is a really good left fielder. I think that you're going to hear an argument against that. Everybody's down on Fowler just because he looks like he's so, you know, a tear ahead of right. He's so chill that it just looks like he doesn't try. I made the effort comment. I'm really personally not lived it down a little bit. I didn't mean it like he doesn't try. I just think that his legs maybe have given out on him a little bit. I think he's kind of wearing everything a little bit. I think he is better defensively in the outfield than Carpenter is in the infield. And I think there will be, some argument about that, but they run down a bunch of balls. And I still think he's a good player. I think that his all-around game is suffering right now because he's not hitting. And it's another thing I can't see him set for an extended period of time. I think that, like how you and I were talking today, we may have an exhaustion-type issue with Carpenter like we had before. And I just wonder if there may not be a little 10-day DL stint to get Fowler right at some point. You know, I think that would be the way that he gets an extended break. But I just don't know. It is getting late early for some of these guys, and that's what kind of concerns me.
Yeah, I mean, as we were talking before the show, you're talking about a quarter of the way through the season for the most part. It becomes frustrating to see. Now we see Harrison Bader hit a home run tonight, mm-hmm. Which is another reason for him to play against lefties because he's always crushed them. And then we see Jerko and things. I don't know. I don't really know when this is going to change. And I don't really know how it does, without a trade. And then that doesn't seem like it's possible either.
No, yeah, that's, and I mean, it would take a lot to trade him, especially with his no trade. So and I mean that as in whatever financially you take a pretty big hit. And it may not be to that point, just like you and I talked about before. Like last year we were clamoring like, hey, stay around and make a deal at the, Whoa, did you see what I just saw?
No, I didn't, but woo. I'm sure I'll hear about it in a minute.
Yeah. Oh. Ozuna just about knocked that building over.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, he's coming around. And I kind of wanted to get to that. And I'll just go ahead and do that now. Ozuna is so much better than I gave him credit. He does things well. He's a good outfielder. He's a good base runner. And then you kind of feel like he's close to start doing things like that. And that's where I think that there's a disconnect on the Fowler situation is. Bader seems to spark the team when he's in there, and he's a good defender, where I'm not so sure, this sounds terrible, that Fowler's doing those things, but I'm not certain that that's just not under the microscope with Dexter right now.
Well, and you know, first of all, well, I'd say if game day is right, that was a heck of a pitch for Ozuna to hit, because it was kind of down and in, and he's...
It was. Yeah, it was off his feet. I thought he fouled it off at first. I was like, oh, ooh.
Yeah, it worked. You know, of course, Fowler was signed to be the clubhouse guy, too. I mean, obviously, he was going to bring production to the field. He was going to, you know, cover center field, which, if they knew they had Tommy Pham, they probably never signed Dexter Fowler in the first place. But, or if they thought Harrison Bader was this close or whatever. I think to some degree the Fowler signing was a pushback on y'all never spend money.
It's BP. It's BP right now. There,
Alan's gonna be making noises all night long. Apparently, about this thing, he's watching the game. I've got game day on, so I'm a little behind. But
well, one of the let's put it this way: two of the lineup replacements that hit left-handers well.
Yeah.
Have crushed bombs, and one of my favorite Cardinals just destroyed a pitch.
Yeah, it's three home runs in this inning.
Yeah,
you know, game is now serious for the first time in about. I guess since Wong walked one off that back at Saturday, it's been about a week, and I would guess, I don't know for sure since I can't see this stuff, but I am guessing that that will be the end for Mr. Lauer tonight, for the Padres when you give up, three homers like that in a row, and that's not your
first. At that ballpark at night.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough thing to do. I don't know where I was.
I know.
I doubt it was all that relevant either, but.
Yeah, it's more about Fowler and
the Fowler, you know, he signed for all this, but, you know, again, 2 years into a contract, a very significant contract, it makes it difficult for you to bench him on a regular basis. Now you're right. Maybe they'll get a DL stint. Maybe they'll do something, but you watch Harrison Bader, and I know, like I said, Bader's much better against lefties, and we saw tonight, than he is anything else. But I watch him play defense. You know, I think he may play better center field than anybody out there. Even Pham, who plays a very good center field, I think Bader just seems to cover more ground. And I don't know, maybe he doesn't. Maybe it's just when I've watched him. But, you know, if you have a defensive outfield of him and Pham and Ozuna, you're doing pretty well. And then if everybody hits, but you know, again, they've kind of painted themselves into this corner, and now
I do think a four man outfield with Bader Fowler will work for them. I do agree with that. I think that Fowler will come out of it enough to be productive. I also think that Fowler's a great base runner. I think defensively he's not the liability that some think that he is. Bader is obviously better, but I do think that this has the makeup to be a pretty good outfield foursome.
And it could be, but it's the thing is how is Mike Matheny going to use them?
The problem.
Because if Bader's only going to start against lefties, I mean, you don't see that many lefties. I mean, you see some, obviously. But is that going to be enough to balance it out? You know, do you do a regular platoon with Jed Jerko and, you know, Matt Carpenter and then Fowler and Bader? You know, maybe you do. I don't know. But is that enough? Does the short side of the platoon get enough there? Should they be playing against righties too? A lot of questions. With this lineup, and again, I think we can ideally, if we are plugging this into a computer, and you don't have to worry about contracts, you don't have to worry about people getting, you know, rusty, and you don't have to worry about, you know, hurt feelings, which, yes, feelings have to be factored in. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the overall thing. I mean, if you don't make a decision because somebody's feelings get hurt, or and vice versa, but you also do have to manage these people. I mean, the people that are there. And, if you didn't have to factor all that in, obviously the lineup looks kind of like it does tonight. But it doesn't always work that way. And so I don't know. I really feel like it's getting to the point where maybe not this season, but maybe in the off season, they explore a trade somewhere for Fowler.
You
need a lot of that money.
Yeah, let me ask you this, and this could be one that you're like, no way. When Mo made that trip to Vegas to meet with Fowler, do you think it was only about switching positions, or do you possibly think it was a deal to where he was like, hey, we're making a run at Stanton. Names are going to be brought up. What is the likelihood of you... what would it take for you? Those lines was not brought up.
The wave, like the wave is no trade and all that.
Wave is no trade.
Seems
pretty excessive just to move a position, to ask him to move a position.
Well, I mean,
now these guys are ultra competitors, and that may have been what it was. But I just have a feeling that there was probably more greasing the skids on that in case the chance ever was popped up.
I mean, maybe. Although Mo has admitted that he just likes Dexter. It may have been that it was, you know.
And I agree with that. But out, that,
hang out
that
a
is
bit, you know.
Exactly. But that is also a soft landing.
Yeah.
For someone to say that.
Sure. And I mean,
you know,
I wouldn't be surprised if they, maybe he at least tried to get a feel for, you know, if there was a trade or if this happens, do you want to be traded? You know, if this happens.
100%. That's kind of where you worded it better than I did. That's kind of where I was going with it.
But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously, Fowler's time on the field, although he did pretty well the most of the second half of last year, or even after the first month or so, he started that slow start. But he wasn't what we thought. I mean, he wasn't the leadoff guy. He wound up turning into a, you know, a slugger.
Mm-hmm.
But he did a pretty decent first year, but the contract hasn't gone the way that the Cardinals thought. I don't think it's gone the way that Dexter expected it to, and I don't know what his... I mean, he says all the right things on social media and stuff like that, and his wife does as well, and I think she's a little more unfiltered, so maybe you should believe it if she's saying it. But I don't know what they're feeling about their time in St. Louis, and it may be if this thing doesn't turn around that they're thinking, yeah, we'd be fine to try someplace else. I don't know. But I don't really see the Cardinals cutting bait on Fowler this year. Now, I could see later in the year, I could see him being more of a guy that only played, that only started, you know, two or three times a week. I could see that when it comes down to July and August, if things haven't turned around and they're in a race and Bader's hitting well, or they've brought O'Neill up or something. I think I can believe that more than I can believe Carpenter sitting.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. And the, you know, Kyle would know this, and Colin would know this a lot more than I would. But if one of the Cuban outfielders starts to hit for power and can bring the electricity the Bader does, that's going to push some doors too. You know, I'd wondered about that because it's a long season. And one of the things that you had brought it up with Carpenter, something else we've got to consider with Fowler is he is 32 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, this could be the player that he is, to where it could be a, not necessarily a part-time gig, but he may have to set some in the heat of the summer if someone's playing better. So yeah, I agree with everything you said.
All right, well, let's shift a little bit because we've been talking about this for quite some time now, and you can because the offense is going to be a situation that I think a lot of people are going to play because it feels like right now that if the offense ever got on track, this team could really take off. Because even with the news this week of Carlos Martinez, we're going to get to this in a little bit, you know, the pitching staff, for the most part, is keeping teams and keeping the team in games and is keeping a hold of leads. So if you can get them that, or if you can get them, you know, six runs in two, three innings, something like that tonight, if you can do that on a regular basis, it feels like this team really could go somewhere. I said, let's talk a little bit about this. Cardinals, since we have recorded last, and of course last week, as Alan and I were recording, we were trying to discern if Yadier Molina was still alive or not, after Jose DeJesus Ortiz's tweet, which I gotta say,
poorly,
you know,
good.
Yeah, I mean, it was, even divorced from Darryl Kyle and all those kind of people, because anytime you start bringing stuff up, people that have lived through that as Cardinal fans, you know, three different deaths, you do get paranoid. Or you even think about something like Juan Encarnacion taking the ball off his face and never playing again. To use the word devastating and to not back it up anytime soon or not to come along and say it's, you know, it's not that bad or, you know, not to feel in it, but even divorced from all that, Molina had surgery. That's not good.
Mm-hmm.
But he's going to miss a month to 6 weeks. I mean, that's not... I mean, and you've got to... It's not like Yadier Molina was the only thing holding this team together. I mean, Yadi was huge to it, don't get me wrong. But it's not like he was the only guy hitting and now his bat's gone and this is just terrible for the Cardinals, so they got to figure out how to survive. I mean, yeah, it's not great. We don't want that. But to go to that extreme seems... I don't want to use unprofessional or anything like that, but it just wasn't right. I think, if you want to say devastating news and say, Molina's not out, you know, from what I understand, Molina's not out of the year and I'm still trying to confirm stuff, you know, it's devastating in a baseball sense, something like that. But, you know, you throw all that out there, it gets people concerned.
Well, I agree. And it was funny. I didn't say this. There was no way I wanted to say what's getting ready to come out of my mouth last week. When I read devastating news, he's trying to confirm. Heck, Daniel, I thought that he may have ruptured a femoral artery. You know what I mean? And it would have been the worst case scenario.
Sure.
And I was like, I'm not bringing this up on air because I don't want to be the one to throw that out there. But that was the first thing that popped into my mind. I was like, no, wait a second. But then you can kind of turn into, hey, that word, that is going to, if it's that devastating, that's going to come out pretty fast. But still you're thinking, okay, why tweet that and then set on it?
Yeah.
You know, you're exactly right. Uh-huh. So I'm thinking, wait, what is this? I mean, even if we had heard his career's done, it would have been a lot better than what some of us were thinking.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just like, well, it's kind of ignorant. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I don't want to bash it either, but it was just a poor choice of words.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. If it had been his career was over, I mean, you could argue that would be relevant there. Because he did say devastating for the Cardinals. He didn't necessarily say devastating in general or devastating for the Cardinals. So if Yadier Molina was gone, you know, if his career was over, that would probably be relevant there. I mean, I get that. But you're right. When everybody else is talking about him in surgery and, you know, Benji's asking for prayers and things
like
that.
Yeah, he's like, whoa.
It's like, did something go wrong in the surgery or are we talking, you know? And again, then not to, you know, follow that up. I mean, I'm not a journalist. I don't deal with this stuff. But I don't know how hard it would be to confirm that, you know, Yadier Molina had surgery and this is what he's expecting. I mean, call a couple of doctors up and say, hey, this is what I heard Yadier's having, you know, what's the recovery time? I mean, I just didn't, but anyway, that's enough about that. Anyway, so since we last talked, Yadier went on the DL, Dominic Leon went on the DL, Martinez went on the DL, and then today Tyler Lyons goes on the DL, and that's not even counting the fact that they brought John Gann up and they brought John Brevia up, so there's been like, you know, what, six moves in 6 days. it's pretty par for the course because the Cardinals have made about three or four moves every week this year, which is kind of crazy. The big one, let's hit the big one. I mean, obviously, we've talked a lot about Yadi and what that means. We talked about that last week, but the biggest one other than that was the fact that Carlos Martinez kind of out of the blue went on the disabled list. You know, he pitched Tuesday. Wasn't typical Carlos, but I don't think anybody ever expected anything that was a problem. But apparently he complained about soreness or something, I think, on Wednesday, and they did an exam, and they decided best to just go ahead and disable him because of the off days and things like that. And it doesn't sound like he's going to miss more than one start because of the way that things can roll around. It is a little bit strange for how it came up, but I think you are of the opinion, and I may be wrong, you can correct me, but I think you are of the opinion that this is kind of their way of using that 10-day DL to their advantage, that they're going to use this for a little bit of rest.
Yeah, I fully believe that. Gersh was on the air this week and said, he was just a little more sore than normal. And I thought, okay, well, that makes sense, you know, precautionary reasons. But that Sunday start was open before they had announced that he was injured. And I understand that they were probably holding that over for Wainwright or however they were going to do it, but they could have very easily announced Martinez ahead of time and then figured it out come Tuesday and Wednesday in Minnesota. So I thought it was kind of fishy how that all worked out. So I do think, yeah, there may have been some soreness, but I don't think he's injured. I think it's a way to build in an inning saver and to skip a start, and I kind of like that idea. So there's a part of me, too, that's maybe just wishful thinking, and that he may be out a month because it's the last strain. You know what I mean by that? We're just like, well, we're being told that it's not much and it may be massive, but I don't think that. I do think it's probably an innings issue. Or a built-in rest issue, let's put it that way.
Well, and I think it's just that's the advantage of this 10-day DL, that they can say, hey, look, this is probably nothing. This is something that normally you just skip a start, you know, shuffle the rotation around. But, you know, if it had been the 15-day still. But with the 10-day, yeah, we'll put you on it. That means we get another arm up and, you know, that kind of thing. I think it's being smart with what this 10-day DL is. It's not... I don't think it's quite to the Dodgers version of this from last year, where the Dodgers basically, you know, watched a guy sneeze and then they would put him on the DL so they could basically run a six-man rotation as they kept weaving people in and out of the DL. But it doesn't sound like it was, you know, like I said, it does sound like they're just a little bit of precaution in a situation where they didn't have to have that extra 5 days and stuff. So that'll work. I know when we first got that that press release, and we're like, oh, you know, that kind of sounded like a thing that could linger. And I don't know that I think there's going to be a little bit of concern that it will. Carlos will probably come off the DL at the 10-day, but I think we're still going to want to watch him and see, you know, if that flares up. Because I know it's different, and you know better than I do that it's different, but, you know, I immediately start thinking about obliques and how they kind of move around. So, you know, I guess we'll have to see if this is the same type of thing.
Yeah, let's hope not. Let's hope that it's that we are right in our conspiracy theory that it's kind of log in some time where you can and buying a little bit of time and see where we go. It does make you feel a little bit better, though. Well, I don't even want to say this because I'm afraid it'll jinx it, but Reyes is looming. So they, he's taking somebody's spot at some point.
Yeah, let's go up. Let's go ahead and shift into that before we maybe talk about some of this other stuff.
I'm excited about it. So,
yeah, Alec Reyes made his first rehab start this week. So the clock is ticking on Reyes. He is on his way back. You know, we've talked all year. We've talked even about the off season. Although, you know, in the offseason it was kind of talking about May 1st, but as soon as Greg Holland signed and they put him on the 60-day, you know, we've been kind of looking at that June 1st date, and that's kind of where we're getting to. The idea is that he'll pitch in Peoria on Monday. I think he's going to pitch in Springfield the 5 days after that, and then Memphis 5 days after that, but they may switch those around depending on the home, you know, try to pitch him whether at home. And then after that, it's probably St. Louis. You're right. So far, you know, we hit 99 on the gun. It's hard to know what we're going to get out of Reyes because, you know, we know the legend of Alex Reyes, and we got a chance to see a little bit of that in 2016, but we never saw the full Alex Reyes, if you will. And then we're going to get a guy that's coming back off Tommy John, which, you know, typically saps some of that kind of thing. I mean, it is a little early still, and I know we'll talk about it again as it gets closer, but what do you think we're going to see out of Alex Reyes when he does make it to the big leagues?
Well, I'm trying to temper my expectations just because I'm so high on him, and I know a lot of guys that I really trust aren't, that they're a little worried about that now, and I know that you and I talked about his inability to throw strikes even when he was healthy, or his lapse of strike zone command when he was healthy, I guess I should say.
Yeah.
But I still, that's a force. This year, I don't know what to expect this year. Now, I do think he will have a great career afterwards. Like, next year, I'll really have high expectations. But I just like the fact that he can be dominant. He's a strikeout arm. And, you know, he's close. So it's going to make for some interesting questions here in about a month. And like I said, these things have a way of playing themselves out. But as far as expectations, though, I'm trying not to set the bar too high. But it's tough for me not to be very excited.
Yeah, I mean, I got into a bit of a discussion with a few people, including it was started by Dan Buffa on one of his tweets, and my friend Bob Netherton joined in as well. But basically, you know, Dan was saying, well, when Reyes comes back, Weaver has to go down. And
I agree, disagree. Go ahead.
Yeah, you were in that. Yeah, I think you got tagged in there at some point in time as well. But, you know, the general idea is that, yeah, if you had to make that decision today, maybe that's what you do. I mean, there's some issues with Michael Walker as well, but I don't know how easy it is, if at all, to send him to the minors. Maybe that's what you do, but 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, whenever Reyes comes back, situations can be totally different. I mean, you look at it now, you know, Weaver tonight, you know, has pitched 3 scoreless innings, about to start the 4th inning, already looking better than he did, which, granted, it's the Padres, and granted, it's a Petco, sure. But, you know, if he pitches 2 or 3 more starts like that, you probably don't send him down, and then you got to figure out what do you do.
Well, and you know what? I thought Weaver looked good in his last start after the rough first couple of innings. He really settled down, settled in. I'm a big Weaver guy. I'm really high on their pitching. And so it will be interesting to see how everything plays out. But yeah, I agree with that. I thought that was kind of throwing him to the wolves a little early. Now, that may be a path of least resistance type situation too, to where he would be one with options that could do it. But I feel like he's achieved everything he can in Memphis. The parallels between his ascension and Flaherty's are almost identical. And the fact that Flaherty is knocking on that door as well of, hey, what more can I do down here to prove myself that I belong up there? You know, so it's just going to be interesting how it works. I mean, and that's a Flaherty and a Reyes who are going to be ready. And according to Saxon, Reyes is going to be in that rotation.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it's actually kind of exciting to see how it will ultimately all fall into place.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Flaherty's coming up to make the start on Tuesday, but, you know, again, he can throw a no-hitter, and he's probably going back down.
Uh-huh.
You know, if Carlos Martinez is ready, then he'll go back down. So, I know a lot of people get frustrated about that, especially with Adam Wainwright returning as well, and I know Wainwright has pitched well so far this year, but if he struggles, then people will start the whole drumbeat for Flaherty again. I don't know. I just don't know how they're going to work all that. I really don't. I mean, obviously, injuries, you know, we had this discussion Wednesday morning, and Wednesday afternoon, Carlos Martinez goes on the DL, and it's like, well, you know, baseball finds a way. But, you know, without some sort of injury issue, I don't know. I mean, because, like I said, you don't have room for a Jack Flaherty who is just destroying Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to put Alex Reyes in the rotation, which it definitely sounds like that's the plan. You know, Flaherty's going to even farther back to try to get in. But how do you get Reyes in there? Well, without shifting a Walker to the bullpen, which the bullpen already has too many arms in it. I mean, we're kind of see them run that Memphis shuttle so much with, you know, but right now it's, you know, you just can't do much. There's too many arms out there.
With him being fast-tracked, there's got to be a plan.
Yeah, I think there is. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's tough to wrap your mind around it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know. It's funny. Here they are. We'd have loved to have been in this situation of 21-14 last year and been 7 games above at any point last year. And now they're up there and we're still asking a lot of the same questions. That's why it's so beautiful to be a fan. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and again, I mean, we're not asking where is this going to come from? We know where's.
Yeah.
We just don't know how it fits in. And I think, again, we've had this discussion with the bullpen, with the starting rotation, with the offense, that there's too many arms, there's too many bats, there's too many people, but it's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good problem to have, but it's still a problem. And it's a problem that's got
still
to be solved. Right.
Yeah.
It's got to be solved, and it's probably not going to be solved in a way that everybody's going to be happy with.
Oh, that's the most absolute thing we've said all night.
Yeah. I mean, you know, because I just wonder if, you know, if there's a trade in the works, or at least being thought about. You know, Mo usually doesn't pull his trigger till end of July, but he may do something beginning of June to try to free something up, you know, but then what is it? I mean, cause again, there are too many people here. You know, unless you're trading three or four for some sort of upgrade, and you know, you could talk about Manny Machado all you want, but the Cardinals are not going to trade a whole lot of pieces for a guy that's going to leave at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back in the winter, maybe, because you got to get the whole season out of him. But now, I mean, you know, you're probably talking, you're already almost a quarter of the way through. You're only going to get three quarters of a season if you trade for him, and then you got to hope that he'll want to come back, which is not likely because he's going to go to the very free agent market, and you're just going to have to pay a whole lot of ton of money to get him back. That's just not what the Cardinals do. This is where Mo and Gersh are going to really have to earn their money and figure out where all these pieces go. And it's due to Mo's hoarding instinct, I think, to some degree, because he's had chances to trade some of these guys off in the past. And I think the idea is all of these guys aren't going to pan out. And then all of a sudden, all these guys pan out.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I mean you're exactly right, and then it gets into a situation of, yeah, even if there were a move to be made, what do you get? You know, what is a target? I mean, because they're solid just about everywhere. So I don't know. You're exactly right. It's a good problem to have, but it's still a problem. So there's going to be a glut of talent at some point, and you know, some teams would be envious, but. It's still, this is, we're Cardinals fans and somewhat never happy, so we're kind of want to see how it all works out.
Yeah, I just hope that there's not a, you know, I do hope that if there are people that have to go, that they will get some value for them.
Agreed.
I really don't want them to get lottery tickets, although sometimes those work out.
Yeah.
But I'd like them to have at least some, I'm not saying you're going to go out and get top prospects from anybody or anything like that. But at least if you can get some solid guys that look like they're going to contribute in maybe 2 years, when you can get some of this glut gets away from you, I can do with that. But you don't want to see people just, you know, waived or cut or shipped off for some A-ball guy that we'll never hear about again. You know, like that Jim Edmonds guy. He got traded for some A-ball guy. I don't remember who that was.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. It feels like there needs to be something, but we'll see. Patron pitcher goes on the DL today. Back strain, which surprised me. I figured if he was ever going with the DL, it'd be that knee again.
Mm-hmm.
And Brett Cecil gets activated. Tough to know what we're going to get with Cecil. I mean, he pitched the one game this year. We know he struggled some, most of the last year. He kind of had had spurts where he was good, spurts where he was really bad. I don't know if we'll get to see him tonight or not. The way Weaver's going, maybe not. But what do you think? I mean, is he? We've got him. I guess he's the only lefty out in the pen right now.
Yeah, and it is funny how we, it was no more than a week ago you and I were talking about Cecil and how that was going to work out. And I think the day after you and I talked about it, he had actually had an appearance for Springfield. We were like, well, he must be on his way back now. And then it's crazy how it just finds a way to work out sometimes. And you know what? I kept thinking that this would be a rebound season for Cecil, but it just seems like we'll have to start from here, but it never seemed to get off track, you know, with him having to leave during spring training for a little while. And then, you know, him having the one appearance and then we don't see him again. You know, I don't know. I guess, it seems like he has a lot to prove, but he's kind of a forgotten man as well. So I don't know. I think he could be super effective in the bullpen, though.
Well, and I mean, he's going to have to be. Because, like I said, I mean, with Lyons out, with Sheriff down in the minors, I mean, he's the one guy. And he didn't have that last year. Last year, he didn't get lefties out like he should have for being a lefty specialist. I think he even got righties out better. We're going to have to see. And obviously, the first game wasn't that great for him, but you know, he goes on the DL immediately after, so you start wondering how much he was, you know, that played into it. I don't know. I think it's going to be somebody to definitely keep an eye on, because he's not, again, he's somebody that's an unmovable object as well. I mean, he's got 2 years after this season on his contract. It's a pretty pricey contract. And you may have a lot of arms out in the bullpen, but he's going to be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Just not movable. So you got to hope that he can be somewhat productive in that. As for Dominic Leone, I got a little bit concerned.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what I saw was it was a, what they call it, you know, baffling or puzzling nerve injury. Sounds to me like that's something they don't really know what the problem is, and if they don't have the problem is, it's hard to know if they can fix it.
Yeah, it's funny that it's kind of already, he's kind of a forgotten man already, and his injury worried me because I really liked him and I thought he was going to be super valuable, and it really puts a lot of the spot. Now, Holland did look good last night, which made me feel a little bit better, but it's going to be big time important for him to fill that gap, because I thought Leone was really good. So yeah, when you start hearing nerve and this, you're just like, we've heard this too many times. Ended two careers essentially in Carpenter and Mulder. I don't know. So it's troublesome without a doubt.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to see how that plays out, but it feels like that's a guy that we might not see for quite some time. Of course, we thought we wouldn't see Cecil for quite some time, and all of a sudden he's back. So,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of like you don't see him until they're gone, you know, until they return. The Cardinals don't always do a real good job of updating on some of these guys, and they don't have to, and sometimes they don't, you know, things go quickly, but I don't think anybody thought Cecil was close enough to do a rehab assignment, and all of a sudden he, you know, not only does he do a couple of them, but now, and now he's back. So,
oh,
I don't.
Yeah,
know.
No, it wasn't one of those. It was just a misplayed and left. But I will tell you, Jerko has 3 hits and a big time play that Carpenter does not make at third base. If he sets tomorrow, I'm going to be pretty mad.
Well, and I think again, we'll go back a little bit to that. You know, obviously, Joe Jerko did not start last night, even though, you know, one, he's been hitting. Two, he has seemed to have really good success against the Padres over the last couple of years. Now, I'll admit that basing it on the small sample of what Jerko has done against a team is not necessarily the best reason to put him in a lineup. Put that in.
Agreed, completely.
You know, I get with that. I'm going to get with that.
Yeah.
But when Mike Matheny says he doesn't play Jerko because he's 1-for-6 with 2 walks against the starter, that's ridiculous. You know, 6 at-bats is nothing. Plus the fact that, you know, he was basically 3-for-8 when you look at on-base percentage, and that's pretty solid. You know, it was pretty silly for him not to be playing yesterday because of his results. Now, you know, somebody pointed out on Twitter that that Lyles had really bad splits against lefties, and you want to put lefties in there. That makes sense. I'll give you that. But that doesn't mean Jed Jerko can't play first base, you know, instead of Jose Martinez, who could use a day off here and there. It doesn't mean that, I don't know. And it's not the reason that Mike Matheny gave. And that's what I think bothers me the most, is if Mike Matheny is making decisions based on such a tiny sample size versus the fact that you know, Jed Jerko really is one of the best hitters that we're seeing right now. If you want to play the hot hand, Jed Jerko is it. I don't know. That really kind of stuck with me this week today when I saw that that was an actual reason for not playing Jed Jerko last night.
Yeah, it was. I thought the same thing. And you're right. I wasn't banking on the splits versus the former team either. I just hate that he just doesn't get a chance to play at all. And you're just like, every time he does, he produces, and this is a perfect example. But yeah, it seems like there is a little bit of excuse making for Carpenter a little bit, which is, it's one of those you can't help but be a little frustrated where you almost wish that he would just come out and say, hey, we've got to get him going sometime. You know, but it's never worded like that, really. So yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that seems like that was excuse finding.
Well, my problem with you got to get him going is right now you got to get everybody going. You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, why does Carpenter get that extra that, you know, Fowler doesn't? Although Fowler's done pretty well. I mean, Fowler has gotten some chances too. Don't get me wrong, but it feels like, you know, in the past it was like Wong had to. You know, Wong has talked about having to hit his way into the lineup. You know, Carson Kelly's 0-for-3 tonight. Is he going to start tomorrow? I don't know. But, you know, I just don't feel like that some of these reasonings are consistent enough, I guess is what I'm saying. And so why should Carpenter get a chance to – and I get that. Maybe because Carpenter's got a better bat when he's healthy than anybody else does. And so if you can get him right, you're in good shape. But – yeah, it kind of goes back to that question we asked at the beginning of the show. How long do you run him out there? How long do you try to keep him from being right before it's just not worth it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's I hope that he gets hot enough to where, you know, this conversation ends, but I just don't feel like that's going to be the case. And I think, like I said, in the offseason quite a bit, I like Jerko. I really like 130-game Jerko. I've kind of circled this the next two games in Minnesota as a situation where you could utilize the DH a little bit to where either Martinez or Carpenter will get a chance to DH, and you have that flexibility of having Jerko and Wong still in there defensively. That makes so much sense. But I can almost guarantee you, because we see it all the time, that Greg Garcia will DH one of those games, and which will doesn't make any sense at all, but it's just bound to happen.
I understand what you're saying, and you're probably going to be right, but I do think that Garcia will play those games. But I think that they, you know, realize his glove is better enough that he'll be out there. I tell you, if Greg Garcia DHs when you have all these other options, I think, St. Louis might run out of pitchforks and torches. I think that this is going to be, you really wish you could figure a way to get Tyler O'Neill up here to have him DH or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. You make a little extended look.
Yeah, but, you know, for two games, I don't know how much it's worth it, but I don't know. I think that you're right. They got to figure out that he's the hot hand and he's the guy that needs to be playing right now. And when he cools off, then you can get that rest. You're right. You look at the splits in August and September. Of course, last year he had an injury to deal with, but Jerko has slipped off in his last, you know, the last home stretch, if you will. Over the last couple of years while he's been in St. Louis. So getting him a little rest early might help. Although, as we were talking earlier, for people like Yadier Molina, we think rest would help, and it doesn't. It doesn't matter. He doesn't need rest. Jerko might, though. I mean, he might be one of those ones. He might be actually a normal human being, unlike Yadier Molina, and need some rest. But, you know, you worry about that at the time. You know, he's probably not going to be the hottest hand from now until August. If he is, then you deal with the problems we deal with. But, you know, maybe if you play him, maybe you've got a 10-game lead. It doesn't matter. I think with that rotation, if you're going to have that many people that can legitimately start games, like I said, you've got to play the person that's hitting And the difference right now between Jerko and Carpenter is so extreme, you just have to do that.
There's always something to bang your head against the wall again with this ball club. I mean, I think they're good and they're actually fun to watch. It's quite a bit more entertaining than last year to watch, because last year just seemed really dysfunctional and they were plugging guys in this lineup and out and all those things. But I think you got a good ball club, and you know, we just hope that, that the leader, can push some of the right buttons on these, you know, as far as playing time goes. I think that a rotation of playing time between a Martinez, a Carpenter, a Jerko, and a Wong, I think could work. I think you could keep guys fresh. I think you could even play Garcia short periodically, because DeYoung's going to need days off. Well, I'm just not convinced that they're just not going to ride Carpenter until they honestly just have to pull him out of the lineup. I hope it's a situation where it doesn't get to that he does hit it enough to where they can start a rotation to keep everybody fresh. I'm not confident that they have. I don't have the confidence in them to be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I do feel like you look at tonight's game, where I think in years past Carpenter probably would have played this anyway, even if his numbers against Lakers mm-hmm. are so bad. And I feel like that's been happened a couple of times this year where they've benched him at times. I mean, again, it's just a day off and whatever, but you know, Carpenter plays 150 games a lot of times, so to get these days off is a little bit strange. So I think that they are cognizant of this stuff, and I think they're doing what they can, but you know, I think that the idea that Carpenter has to, you know, kind of get on track, and he's got to hit to get to be in games to get on track, is overriding right now. You know, will that change as it goes along? I don't know. And you know, I understand why people don't trust that the manager's going to pull the right buttons or push the right buttons on these things, because there's a track record of that not happening. So,
mm-hmm.
but right now, you just kind of, like I said, you take things like tonight where he didn't start, and hope that that's a sign that the Cardinals realize what they need to do. You know, kind of thinking, you know, we talked about it, you know, kind of thinking that Jerko plays tomorrow instead of Jose Martinez, because it's very difficult to think that Carpenter's getting 2 days off unless there's another lefty going tomorrow, which I didn't look to see. But
I don't think it's still, I think it's Sunday. Let me check the matchup. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the case.
Yeah,
I think
if you go Sunday, then that makes another sense. You know, you let Jerko play, you let Jose Martinez get a day off, and then Sunday you can go back to letting Jerko play and Carpenter sit. And if Carpenter sits two of the three games, or two of the four, I guess, when you talk about it yesterday in San Diego, I think that's something in the positive side for the manager. You know, that's just not something that would have happened in the past. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen again here. You know, Carpenter very well may be out there on Sunday, but if he's not, then I think it's an indication they realize how bad this is going right now.
It's Clayton Richard. I thought that's what it was, and that's on Sunday. So as of right now, the starters are announced as Wainwright and Richard, then Tyson Ross is going tomorrow for the Padres. So that would work out. I mean, you're right. You'd think that it could be a natural fit to where Carpenter would play first and Jericho would stay at third, and then they could maybe flip it around again on Sunday. But I would be surprised if they go by that, you know, especially if they win tonight, which looks pretty good. Now, Weaver's running into a little bit of trouble, but they can go to the bullpen and maybe get out of this. If they blow a 7-run lead, you know, other issues. But, you know, if they win tonight, then win tomorrow, you wonder how much of a throwaway game Sunday becomes. You know, that's you wonder about the lineup, because you would probably see Garcia Sunday.
Probably.
You know, so there's a lot of things that could be in play and throw this out the window. But yeah, it would seem to make the most sense to maybe play Carpenter first tomorrow and then flip it back around for Sunday. But you just never know.
Well, and that being, you're right. When you mention Garcia, though, I do also say, you know, you have the off day Wednesday, you have the off day Monday. There is value in going for the jugular here.
Mm-hmm.
You need wins like this. You can't necessarily, I mean, if you'd won even one of the games against Minnesota, maybe you could argue that. But losing those two games there, you got Minnesota coming back up, so you don't know if you're going to be able to do it again. Then you've got the, I mean, it's a softer part of the schedule, don't get me wrong, but I still think there's a value in going out there and saying, we're going to win this game too. And, you know, maybe it's sitting one or two, but I don't know if it's a full getaway game lineup with an off day. But, you know, it probably will be, and I just don't know that that's the way they should approach it, but they've never actually listened to us about that.
No, and then I've noticed that there's quite a few getaway day lineups this year, almost more than I have in the past, which makes less sense than it did with the built-in days off this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. So, you know, and then, like I said, I always, these conversations always, they're great, but we don't know what's going on behind the clubhouse doors either, who's a little banged up and all those things. So that goes into account. That may be a bigger part of it, and you just never know.
Well, but, you know, honestly, you could argue to some degree that almost like tonight's is almost a getaway when you have Carpenter benched and when you have Fowler benched and, you know, except for Rudd and Greg Garcia out there. And yet we don't really think about today's, you know. I mean, part of the issue with getaway lineups, in my mind, when you put that in quotes, if you will, that doesn't work as much here because all the people that are on the bench are strong enough. I mean,
yeah,
you know, Garcia playing shortstop, yeah, okay, that's kind of a, but you know, DeYoung needs to do one. But if you've got Bader playing, that's not a, you know, what we consider a getaway type of thing.
No.
I mean, if you've got, you know, if you've got Jerko playing, if you've got stuff like this, the bench is strong enough. I mean, if Francisco Pena starts and Garcia starts the same game, then yeah, I think you call that a getaway lineup. But, you know, it's not like Carson Kelly's hit yet, so I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, it's funny. To where I was really, I think I texted you like 6:30 this morning about this lineup. I was like, this is who I'd like to see in the lineup tonight. And, you know, you and I kind of carried that all day because that was even about 30 minutes before all heck broke loose on Carpenter, you know, in the St. Louis media all day. You know, it's funny. I know this takes us in a direction which we're trying to wind down, but even Garcia, how we're throwing him out like he's just a throwaway player. I like when Garcia pitch hits.
Mm.
He always throws up a good at bat. I like for what he brings. I think he gets a little overexposed when he plays too much, but, but I do think the roster's good. Yeah, and I'm not so sure they have a catcher that can hit right now, which kind of leads me to a question I was going to throw out at some point of, would you be ultimately surprised if they at some point bring in a veteran to catch two to three, a day or two a week as opposed to Pena or Kelly as a little more backup after losing Molina for a month?
No, I don't think so because, I mean, Pena apparently has really earned some currency, if you will, in
sure.
the clubhouse. And, you know, he's worked for Molina, so, you know, defensively, he works well, and you know, I don't think that they would demote Kelly. Like I said, if Molina was out for their whole year, maybe I could just see that. But I mean, if you're talking a month to 6 weeks, and you're already like basically 1 week into that,
yeah,
I just don't see them doing it for a short term like that.
Yeah, maybe so. I just kind of wondered about that if they ultimately find a more offensive upgrade in Kate. I don't, you know what I mean? Yeah, you know where I'm just kicking the tires. Not like I think they're going to do that because Pena is really, honestly, is about a perfect backup catcher for Molina. You know, it's about a perfect scenario. So, you know, I don't know.
Yep. I think that's the truth. So, alrighty. Well, I think we've done as much damage as we can do. It's probably more so.
It's ice cream time for me.
I don't know Alan's crew. I mean, Alan is like, he's up at the, you know, till late. He gets up early and having ice cream at 11 o'clock. Boy, I don't know how he's living the life. That's all there is to
it. Yeah, got me in a power nap today. That's all that matters. I was running on fumes. Last week, if we had done a Friday show, I'd have been in trouble because I had a hard time keeping my eyes open by the end of the game. I you know, it was game one in Chicago, and I had a bunch of the energy all day, and it really caught up with me after it was over. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, and I, like I said, I crashed in the, like, I barely made it to the game last night, much less, I stuck it out through about 2.5 or 3 innings. We're pinch hitting for Weaver here, 92 mm-hmm. pitches, so that makes sense.
Well, he went 3-0 to Jankowski, and Matheny was on the phone quickly to try not to get it out of hand, and he made really nice, he battled back to strike Jankowski out on a really nice changeup. And then he got Hosmer to bounce back to him, and it was one of those, the end on a high note, five shutout innings, and, log some innings on that too.
Yep.
He's got the young
can, bullpen should be.
We'll see Cecil tonight, I'm assuming.
Oh yeah, with a 7-0 lead, a day off, and yesterday wasn't too bad on the bullpen up, I don't think, but. Because Michaels went, 6-3, 6-2,
yeah,
like
you
got, that. So,
they went Hicks, Holland, and Norris.
Yeah.
That's almost a winning scenario.
Yeah, you got a chance to see him and some others. Alan and I will be back with you next week. Hopefully not talking about any more significant injuries. And hopefully we're talking about a lot of Cardinal wins. Cardinals have finished up this series with the Padres, an off day, then two with the Twins in Minnesota, and then they go to Philadelphia. No, I can, they're at back home for Philadelphia.
Yeah, back home.
So, another 4-game series there. So, that should be interesting to see. So, chance to keep pushing that lead. I mean, they're out in the division. They're at the front of the division. And then they've got a softer schedule. They just need to see if everything clicks. So until next week, for Alan, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Sutter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss. And that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.